Hour number two of the week on Huddle here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newton, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton here with you. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And as we start hour number two, we do what we always do. The weekend poll is out. You still got about 18 minutes to go vote, I believe. Let's see here. Let me refresh my good old laptop. Yes, you do. But our question today, Dr. Crane, how many brackets do you make? One, two, three, or four, or more? Through 21 votes right now as we stand, and you still have time to go vote, so you can sway this opinion if you'd like to. 61.9% of people say one. And I am so, so very proud of those people.
I mean, I thought you had something to follow through. No, I'm a sicko. Call me a sicko. I have to fill out five because it's one, two, three, four plus. So I guess I'm in the category of four plus. I mean, kudos, like you said, kudos to the guys that just fill out one. I mean, if I do fill out one, it's the one out of the newspaper, and then I call it a day.
The newspaper.
It's a tradition I do every year. I get the one out of the newspaper, and I fill it out.
Yeah, that's the old-fashioned way of doing it. I should say I did two this year, but I'm only counting one. Here's my tactic. I do one that's permanent, one that I stand on, one that I submit in all the bracket challenges I do, and I stand on it. The other one I do is just a fantasy booking, like as I call it. I predict, I just put Kentucky to win the whole thing. That's my fantasy booking. And then I have a third one that is blank that I, as the tournament goes on, I write the results because I'm, you know, dumb and I like to keep track of that. But in terms of ones that I actually count, I only do one. So I make one and stand on it, as Tyrese Halliburton says we should do.
Standing on business, Josh, as one Eli Drinkwitz says.
That was a fun time.
Was it?
No, not at all. In my opinion, the one you just described of, you know, the one to keep track of the results with, that one doesn't count.
No, it doesn't count.
No, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
Yeah, Frazier, you mentioned the newspaper. My bracket tradition is I always print out a blank bracket, like the day before the selection show, and fill in the bracket as the selection show is going on and just go with it. I don't know why I do that. It's just kind of a fun thing for me. Kind of like you, Connor. It's just, you know, we all have our ticks, I guess you could say, and yeah, that's just one of my ticks, I guess. It's always a fun thing for me.
I've always just been one that, like the people that do these bracket challenges and then submit four different brackets and get excited when they got High Point over Wisconsin in one of their brackets. Yeah, you made four brackets. You had every single outcome you could possibly have. Of course you're going to hit on it. So yeah, that's why I get really excited when I get it, because I make one. So that's just how I stand. A lot of people are different than me, and I understand it. This time of year only comes once a year. You can only make a certain amount of brackets in this time span. But I've always just been kind of the I'll make one and stand on it person.
So hear me out, Connor and Christian. Like, the five that I make, the one is the definitive one that comes from the newspaper. That one is my tried and true. The second one that I do is more of just for fun, just fill out upsets, do whatever with it. The third one, I'm in with a bunch of friends in like a pool. So I just fill out the first one I did on my newspaper, but I submit that to the digital pool that I'm in. The fourth one is a mixture of the first one that I do and the second one, and I get a different winner on that one. The fifth one's just me being ignorant. I don't know how else to describe that one, but am I considered a sicko?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you make one and stand on it, and then the other ones are just kind of for funsies. So
yeah, I think two definitively, or three of them definitively are stuff that I follow, but the other two are just throwaway paper.
And I think as long as you don't do multiple in one pool, it's fine.
I think
that's fair.
I agree with that.
Yeah, it's only just one in one pool.
Yeah, no, I don't like the people that submit five different ones and then act like they know something when they got something right.
Yeah. Like, the guys that fill out four of them and they take a champion out of all the number one seeds, they're just four different number one seeds winning it all. Like, come on, let's pick one.
That's another gripe I have. My dad is victim to this as well. Picking four one seeds as your final four is the lamest thing you could possibly do.
I mean, hey, it worked last year. I agree, but it did work last year.
It did, but it's lame. It's boring.
I agree.
Show some intrigue. This is what I've learned about March this year. It's always the people that haven't watched a single game this year that act like they know the most. We have a friend that's doing that right now. Guess where he sits in the pool play rankings right now?
Dead last.
Near the bottom.
Near the bottom. You know who's dead last? A couple of girls who picked the dance team. Like which school has the best dance team.
So believe their national championship was Texas Tech over UCF, I think. So that was a tough loss for them yesterday.
Big loss for them. But look, I mean, it's always the ones that act like they know what they're talking about that really don't. And there are people like me and Christian who are just quietly confident. And look, I can come on this show and brag about how I know exactly what I'm talking about. I got five losses through 32 games, but yeah. I'm not going to do that.
And I'll confidently say I'm just the average Joe college basketball fan, and I just resort to you guys because you guys are the experts when it comes to college basketball.
I'm no expert, pal.
Well, I know the ins and outs of basketball for the most part, but, I mean, not anything to the nitty-gritty degree that you guys have.
Yeah, I get very excited about it. I follow it the whole year, unlike some people that just follow it at the beginning of March and act like they know what they're talking about. So that's my gripe. As someone who knows ball, don't act like you know ball if you don't. As the
what
Rock,
does this fall in the new book of fandom? Is this a new chapter?
It may have to be. Don't act like you're a diehard fan if you haven't watched it since November.
Yes.
Because that's what a lot of people do, and especially people in Orange, I've learned, no offense. There are people that they don't start watching Tennessee basketball until Tennessee football is over, to which I say you can watch both.
Shout out, Mom.
It is possible. No offense to Miss Sue. I love Miss Sue.
Oh, she would admit that she does it at least.
Yeah, but there are people that don't, and that's my gripe. I don't know. I say this as coming from a fandom that the bread and butter and pride and joy of our lives is basketball, so it makes sense. But, you know, it is relatively frustrating when, you know, you have these people that act like they know what they're talking about because they've made eight different brackets.
Yeah.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. Phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We're going to switch gears here a little bit. Talk about the Nashville Predators, who are in action today with puck drop at 1 p.m., and boy, am I happy about that. They are taking on the Vegas Golden Knights in Bridgestone Arena. You can hear that right here on 102.5 The Game with pregame starting at 12 p.m. Max Herz will have you covered for that. But Frazier, I, and Christian are going to talk about the Predators coming up next. They're quietly making a playoff push. They got two games this weekend, two of which I think today is probably a four-point game on some level. Mm-hmm. And then they have Chicago tomorrow, which is a division rival. Come Monday, will the Predators be in a wild card position? We'll talk about that on the other side of the break right here on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game. Today, Vanderbilt men's basketball takes on Nebraska in the NCAA tournament with a 7:45 p.m. tip-off, and the pregame show starts at 7:15 p.m. on 102.5 The Game and the Game National app, coverage presented by Gary Force Acura. Of course, that game with Sweet 16 implications on the line as Vandy and Nebraska take on each other in Oklahoma City in the second round of the NCAA tournament. But we're going to switch gears here from the NCAA tournament for just a little bit. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton here with you. The Predators in action today in Bridgestone Arena. They take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights in, again, Bridgestone Arena with a puck drop at 1 p.m., a matinee game. And boy, am I happy it's a matinee game because your boy is a little bit tired. But it's a big one for the Predators today. Looking forward to trying to see if they can clinch, maybe not clinch, but get into a wild card position. I think it's perfectly possible for them to be able to do it by Monday. If they win today and win tomorrow, or at least come away with 3 points this weekend, they would be in perfect position to clinch or again, not clinch, I keep saying that, they would be in perfect position to be in that second wild card position if the season ended today. Nick Frazier, you've been peddling the Predators since November and that they're capable of making the playoffs. Based on the momentum you've seen and the growth from these young guys, how are you feeling about them at the moment?
I feel even more confident than I was in November. I mean, you look at guys like Matthew Wood who are continuously producing. I believe he has 15 points in the last, 25 points, 15 goals.
15 goals, assist. Yeah.
Yeah, excuse me. So, I mean, 25 points and a small sample size for a guy like Matthew Wood. Again, he's elevating his game, and this is what the Preds need out of these young players. They need production out of former first-round talents. A guy that was a first-round pick in 2023 is starting to finally catch his stride in the National Hockey League. We've talked a little bit about Ryan Ufko off the air, but Ufko is one of those guys that I think the Preds needed as a true defenseman because, yeah, you had Nick Blankenberg. He was there helping out for the most part, but there was just something about Blankenberg that was just a bit off. He didn't have that it factor for me. But when you bring in a guy like Ufko, he's continuously performing. He has 2 points in 2 home games. I think that's huge, a goal and an assist.
Yeah, Matthew Wood, you mentioned him. He's got 5 goals in his last 6 games, if that tells you the level of play he's at. Ryan Ufko has been one I've been really impressed with as well. Had the one-timer the other day to get a 1-0 lead against Winnipeg. He is like, I don't know how to, he was definitely the best player on that Milwaukee team, so seeing him called up was pretty expected. But somehow he's overperformed from what I thought he was going to be. He's a player, so he's going to be around here for a long time. It's exciting to see those two guys continue to grow and continue to show that they're going to be a core piece of this franchise moving forward.
Yeah, and a guy that I think has not had much production because he's been up and down from Milwaukee is a guy in Reed Schaefer. Mm-hmm. I'm hopefully there's going to be more out of him, him being another first-round talent. You know, speaking on Matthew Wood earlier, like Reed Schaefer's the same thing. He's a former first-round talent in 22. This is a guy that kind of needs to start catching his stride a little bit. You move off of guys like Michael McCarron and Cole Smith, you need some, I'd say, younger production. And I think Reed Schaefer's one of those guys. When they did have McCarron and Smith, there was a game I went to, I think it was the Calgary game. I think he played in that and scored the first goal. It was a Tuesday night home game, and they ended up winning like 5-1. Reed Schaefer showed every bit that he can play in the National Hockey League with this team. And now that you don't have guys like McCarron and Smith, I wonder if he can finally take that next step and say, hey, I know this team needs me. Let me see if I can be a part of that building culture. And being a former first-round talent, you kind of have to be.
Yeah, he's kind of have to – you kind of have – let me try again. You're going to try and have to see some growth from him. And look, he's shown that he's capable of playing at an NHL level. He's got a goal. He's gotten some key assists. But you're right, Frazier, in that he's been kind of up and down, which is kind of not what you want to see for a first-round talent. He's being outperformed by some of the guys above him, like Ryan Ufko. I know they're on different sides of the puck, but Matthew Wood, I think, is the prime example of guys that are overperforming. So you want to see some growth from him, and consistency, I think, is key. String together a couple of really good games, and then we'll start to feel a lot better. I'm not out on Reed Schaefer. I think he's going to be a good player in this league and a good player for this franchise moving forward. But you're right, and the inconsistency is kind of, you know, visible right now. And I don't want to say it's concerning because he's young. I think he's younger than me, actually, which is kind of crazy to say. But he's younger than me. And, you know, you just want to see some good games start to be stringed together from him.
Yeah, and again, I think we're all expecting more out of him because of the opportunities the Preds have, and that's to be in the playoffs. And, you know, for a guy like Reed Schaefer, I think he'll definitely adapt. I think it'll come here in the next couple of games. But going to the goaltending real quick, Eustace Onanen, after that game against the other night against – why am I escaping?
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg, thank you. Seattle Thursday night. I was at the game. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
The atmosphere in that building was through the roof. And also that after the game when they won, Eustace Onanen, and he showed a little expression of like, yes, thank you. Yes, let's go. Like you could see that on the ice. And this team is special from that reason is that when UC Saros is not available, you need productive goaltending. And Onanen is one of those players that has quietly, you know, put together a decent little season for the Preds. Not a winning record, 7-9. I get that. You obviously want to have your goaltenders a little bit above a 900 save percentage. Both of them are under 900. It's roughly like 88, 89, give or take. Mm-hmm. But again, if you can get the same amount of goal production offensively and supplement that from, you know, allowing some goals here and there, they should be fine. They really should. And I look at it as the – I call it the Edmonton Oilers approach. You know, when they had Skinner in goal for them a few years back, they always had the goal production on their power play with Draisaitl and McDavid. I kind of feel that same trend with the Preds right now. They have all the firepower to score a lot of goals. It's more of, can you get some defensive production? And I think with UFCO, that brings a little extra jolt to the defensive side of the puck where they can do that.
Yeah, it's a good point. And goaltending, I think, is the thing that needs the most consistency, especially from UC Saros. Obviously, he's out with injury, and it remains to be seen if he'll play today. I would doubt it, but you never know. Goaltending, I think, needs more consistency because UC Saros, for example, one night he'll look like a Vezina-winning goalie and just not allow a single puck past that line. And then the next he'll look like he'll be just freshly called from Milwaukee and he'll let three or four pucks through the net. So goaltending needs to be more consistent. I understand that some of it relies on the defense in front of it and how consistent they are, which hasn't been great this season. I think it's been better since the trade deadline because, you know, you get rid of Nick Blankenberg, who I thought was a good player, but you replace him with Ryan Ufko, who has way more upside at that position. Adam Willsby, I think, is about to come back, so it may improve from here. But defense in front of the goaltending needs to be better, and goaltending as a whole needs to be better. Once you find the consistency in that, I think it creates more opportunities for the offense to open up. And as we've seen this season, especially with these young players, this is a Preds team that's capable of generating offense when they feel like it. So I think once the defense and the goaltending starts to shore itself up, like I think it can, then we'll start to see more opportunities and more goals scored for the Predators.
Yeah, and on the UC Saros front, and I heard Ian talk about this with Robbie and Rexford the other day, and he made a good point. When Saros kind of goes into that butterfly, you know, position, but just kind of standing upright, a lot of these goal scorers, they kind of go on the blocker side and they go above his shoulder. And I'm not discrediting UC Saros for his size because, I mean, who am I to say this because I'm 5'5"? I mean, I'm not any taller.
He's too small.
But the fact that Juuse Saarinen is, what, 6'4"? He's able to take up a little bit more or 6'2", give or take. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, inches might be a little bit of a factor, but I'd say they are in this situation. You know how in the NFL, Connor, when they say running backs at the age of 30 start to decline?
Yeah.
I'm wondering the same thing a little bit with the Preds when it comes to goaltending for a guy like UC Saros. Like, he's 30. I'm not saying he's declining, but maybe he's not as quick as he used to be a couple years ago. You know what I'm saying? From like left to right to the pipe.
I don't know. I don't know if he's declining or if it's just a product of the team built around him, but it has seemed like kind of a steady drop off from UC Saros from the start of his tenure as the starting goaltender for the Predators to now.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I think it's more of just being a younger player at the time because you're able to move quicker laterally. And I think the stuff that, you know, even Ian brought up a few days ago about a lot of goal scorers are kind of going to the high blocker. I think it's more of just he has to start learning those tendencies of the players and just start evolving as a goaltender. So I'm not saying start, but just continuously evolve as a goaltender because he's a veteran in this league. He's well-respected. He's still one of the top three goaltenders in the world after the Olympics, a bronze medal-winning goaltender.
And I think so, that helped him, the Olympics.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You're 100% right. So no discredit to UC Saros. Hopefully he recovers soon. But there's just something about the goaltending right now for the Preds, and just hats off to Juuse Saarinen for stepping in.
615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get involved in the conversation. Coming up next, some NFL news that has flown a little bit under the radar, and maybe rightfully so with the tournament going on and baseball getting started and the Stanley Cups coming up here soon. But a little bit of news out of the NFL as we talk about the offseason, and it affects the league as a whole. We'll get to that coming up next right here on the Weekend Huddle. Connor Newton, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton here with you on 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Weekend Huddle here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newton, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton here with you. Talking a little bit of NFL offseason. Now, there was a little bit of not breaking news, but important news across the NFL that I think fell a little bit under the radar. And thank you, Nick Frazier, for bringing this to my attention last night because I was unaware of it myself. The NFL and the CBA are having a little bit of a disagreement right now. And in terms of that, it's because the NFL Referee Association and the CBA cannot come to an agreement. So the NFL's solution to this, if they can't come to an agreement by, I believe, May 31st, is they will start using high school referees. Referees like TSSAA referees to referee NFL games. And probably on a much lower salary than what they're paying their professional referees. Frazier, how important do you think this is to the overall landscape of the NFL and the officiating of National Football League games?
Massive. The brand itself, I compare the NFL to the WWE. It is a worldwide brand now. They are playing games in Australia this upcoming season. They've played games previously in Brazil, Mexico City. They're going to go play some in Spain, I believe. They've already played some in London. So they're all over the globe. And if you have bad officiating, that only just dilutes the product. And I think we all recognize from what we saw back in 2012 with the, I think it was a preseason game. It was the Packers versus the Seahawks. It was the Fail Mary.
Yep.
Where they had both those guys catch the ball at the same time. One was saying incomplete pass interception. The other one was saying a touchdown. I don't think NFL fans, especially here in the States, want to see that again. And I don't think the NFL RA, the Referee Association, wants to see that either. I don't understand why the NFL is trying to penny pinch this because, and I mean, I see the business aspect of it. You're saving some money on the front end of it, but on the back end of it, the product is what's going to bring you in more money. So why not just pay the extra now and then call it a day? But also too, let's remember this. The NFL has already kind of alluded to maybe expanding the regular season to 18 games. That includes a second bye week. That includes more travel for these referees, if that is the case. That there's a lot of stuff up in the air right now for the NFL. And, you know, implementing the pinpoint accuracy on the first downs with the lines and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of like the ABS, but not really.
Right, but for the NFL. And I think last season we saw a little bit of working out the quirks in the NFL RA. So that's where I stand on all this. I think the NFL is just being greedy at this point. They're probably going, like you said, bring in some high school referees, but more than likely they're going to go look at the XFL because a lot of those XFL referees, and I was reading earlier about this last night and the day before, they're going to bring in some college referees that have already gone through the works of the NFL and have done some former preseason games in previous years. So that's something that they're going to look at there, but overall, this is just a bad look on the NFL's front point.
Okay, here's an article from Kevin Seifert on this whole thing. Let me get to the quote I was looking for because I had to scroll up to see who wrote this. Okay, this says, quote, according to the emails, the league is looking for a list of about 150 mostly small college officials by the end of the weekend. Those officials could begin onboarding as early as April, then attend a four-day clinic in May. Absent a CBA agreement, they would continue training through the summer and make visits to training camp before the regular season begins. So it's a race against the clock. And they're looking for, I would imagine, probably Division II and Division III referees and maybe some high school refs. But I think the point of this is that you're going to see a decline in correct officiating in NFL referees. No offense to our high school refs because I think they do a really good job for the leagues that they're in. But I don't think a high school referee and an NFL referee can be compared in the same sentence. It is a lot harder of a job to be officiating the Titans and the Jaguars than it is to be officiating Brentwood Academy and FRA. I'm sorry. And not to name drop those teams or the TSSAA as a whole, because I have nothing but respect for them. But there's no comparison between, as you mentioned, Frazier, refereeing a worldwide organization at this point and, you know, local state high school football. There's no comparison.
Yeah, and a lot of people forget about the XFL. Yeah, it may be a lollygag league to watch in the offseason. But I remember Dean Blandino even and Mike Pereira both saying on those broadcasts that the NFL is using this as a proving ground for these referees. Some of them are college referees that are just getting the extra reps in the offseason. Some of these guys are, like you mentioned, Connor, D2, D3 college referees in the XFL trying to make it to the next jump, and that is the NFL. So this is, again, I see the pros and cons of it all, but overall they need to just get to the point and say, hey, let's figure out if we're going to do an 18-game season. Let's figure out where we're going to go with this going forward. Nobody wants to see 2012 all over again.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not forget, this has happened before, like you mentioned. It happened in 2012, and it eventually got resolved, of course, but it was a frustrating situation. I think you're right in that the NFL is pinching their pennies a little bit too much. Referees, I don't think, need to be overly compensated, but they do need to be paid more than what they're being paid right now, because for the large majority of games that you watch across the NFL season, I would argue that referees do a pretty good job. Every year there's a few calls that, you know, come up and you look at them and you're like, what was this guy thinking? But that's the nature of the game. That's the nature of sports in general. That's what I love about sports officiating, is there's a human element to it. Just like baseball. It's always subjective whether or not it's a ball or a strike. Obviously, there are some that are more obvious than others, but if there's one right at the forehead and an umpire calls it a strike, of course the fans are going to be upset. So there are going to be instances always across all sports, no matter who you put in at the officiating position, that they make a bad call. It's part of being human. It's the human element of the game. That's why I'm against replacing referees with computer-generated officiators, because it takes away the element of the game. So I'm with you. The NFL needs to, you know, get their panties out of a wad and get this one together. It's getting ridiculous.
Yeah, and another thing to add on to all this is when you see these referees trying to make it to the next stage in their career, they're all somewhat fit. And I'm not trying to discredit the current referees that officiate in the NFL, but some of them are not in the best of shape.
Frazier says, no fatties refereeing my game.
Well, no, I'm not just saying that, but like, at least keep yourself in some decent shape to run down the sideline with some of the players, or at least be a good back judge. Like, I mean, you got to be somewhat in shape. And I think some of these guys have kind of fallen out of that. So, again, that might be something that the NFL is trying to look at and investigate. But if that is a part of the requirement going forward with the CBA, tell them to go through a fitness center. I mean, like, just go through a fitness routine before the season. Kind of like when you're I don't know if Metro cops do this anymore or if they still do, if it's just, you know, it's kind of like going to Buds, you know, with the Marines. You have to go through the military checkpoints. That's what I think should happen for NFL officiating.
Here's what's going to happen. They're going to get to April, and they're going to start training some of these guys. They're going to realize how bad of an idea it was, and they'll get a deal done before the end of May. That's what I think is going to happen.
Okay.
That's my called shot.
I got a sick feeling we're going to see preseason football with a bunch of jabronis.
Jabronis.
Hopefully it only lasts for the preseason, and then that wakes everybody up, and we're like, we can't do this. That would be my hope.
Here's the issue, though, is that you look at the preseason, nobody cares about the preseason.
Right.
The NFL is going to be the only people that are going to basically worry about the preseason because of all these no-name NFL referees. Like, I wish I had the numbers in front of me. I want to know how many missed calls there were this past season on the current NFL officiating roster.
It's going to increase.
I'm sure there were a handful of them.
I mean, it's going to increase if you throw Division II, Division III, and high school refs out there, because they're not used to this game. It's a quicker game. You have to be on your P's and Q's to officiate an NFL game, and I don't know if some of these referees can handle that. So it is an interesting story. It is an interesting little news segment there, and I think I speak for all of us when I say I hope they get a deal done.
Yeah, and you wonder if this probably would never leak into college football, because those referees, there's a lot more than them than there is in the NFL. But I would definitely start looking at the best of the best college referees if you're the NFL, because you talk about the – we both have talked about the penny-pinching aspect of it from the NFL. if they go grab the best of the best college football referees, they can still pay them whatever they're currently on that current CBA for the NFL. I mean, that's kind of what they're trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, I would be doing that anyway, especially in the Big 12, because I feel like they have the best officials. They usually do the national championship if it's an SEC and a Big 10 team. So
we got some conference referee analysis on this show. Now,
yes, we do.
That I did not expect.
You're not going to find another show in this city that's going to give you conference referee analysis other than this program right here. So congratulations to you. You found us. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Last call for your thoughts and phone calls. As we wrap things up, in the next segment, we'll play our favorite game, Where Are They Now? We'll do that coming up next right here on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game.
Ooh, light my fire. I feel
you light our fire as we wrap things up here on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newton, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton here with you. And as we wrap things up here, we play our favorite game. Where are they now? We go around the room, list a bunch of career paths, and I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of basketball thrown out by me today as we are in tournament time. Without further ado, let's see. Christian Skelton, why don't you start today?
All righty. Let me get our music.
I shouldn't have thrown you on the spot. Here. I know you're doing a lot back there.
Oh, no, you're all good. Yeah, that was unfortunate. Hold on.
There we go.
I'm actually going to go to the Diamond since it is opening week.
Ah.
So, first off, this man played for three teams. The Mariners, the Rangers, and the Yankees.
I think I know who it is, Nick Frazier.
Three teams. Mariners, Rangers, and Yankees.
Is it A-Rod?
You are correct, sir.
Hell yeah.
Hey.
Nick Frazier, you take it, because I'm not ready.
I'm still going with the Diamond. This one is a name that's been pretty popular the last week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. Played for the Atlanta Braves, Texas Rangers, Chicago Cubs, Cleveland Indians, St. Louis Cardinals, the Giants, Nationals, and then in 2013, the Blue Jays. He is retired. He has turned into a manager. So there you go.
Is this local idiot Mark DeRosa?
Yeah. I'll be on, it is.
I was about to say, if it's somebody who's been in the news recently and he's a manager, the odds are pretty good. It's local idiot Mark DeRosa.
New Jersey guy.
I will be referring to him as local idiot Mark DeRosa for the foreseeable future. All right, we're going to the court. Kentucky legend. Played for the Boston Celtics, Dallas Mavericks, Sacramento Kings, Chicago Bulls, New Orleans Pelicans, Los Angeles Lakers, Atlanta Hawks, Los Angeles Clippers, back to the Lakers, and finished up with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Who'd he start with again?
Player.
The Boston Celtics.
Okay.
Won a championship there in Boston.
I think I might know who it is, but I can't think of his name. Like, I see him, but I don't know that guy's name.
He is commonly confused for another point guard who did not play at Kentucky. He played at Wake Forest.
I'm going to go with Antoine Walker.
Okay.
I don't have anything. Antoine Walker sounds good to me, Frazier.
You're both going to kick yourselves. It's Rajon Rondo.
I don't know why I don't think of him as a Kentucky guy. Like, I only picture him in a Celtics uniform. Like, I don't ever picture... Like, when did he play Kentucky? Like, what year?
He played there 2 years. It was 04 to 06.
That explains why.
It was the Billy Gillespie era.
We were quite small.
And
children.
Tubby Adam.
Yeah.
But it is Rajon Rondo.
Dang
it. Oh, it's me again.
Yes, it is.
We are going to stay on the diamond here.
Yes.
So.
Yes!
This man started his career with the Detroit Tigers. Then he went to the Cincinnati Reds. Then the Seattle Mariners. Arizona Diamondbacks. Back to the Mariners, and now back to the Reds.
Oh, it is, you just got him.
Gino Suarez.
Yeah.
Yes, World Baseball Classic hero, Gino Suarez. The only reason I wasn't too mad, USA lost.
Yeah, probably should have won MVP, too.
Yeah, that was weird to me. I don't know why he didn't. But
Mikel Garcia had that RBI. In the
yeah.
Center. I get it. But game-winning run, Eugenio Suarez.
Yeah.
Come on, right? All right, let's see. Going over to football. Football.
Football.
Football. Let's see here. Is this going to show up? No? Yes? Maybe? My computer is, I think, dying on me. I don't know. Oh, there we go. No, that's not it. That's okay. Yep. Computer has decided to freeze on me, so that's fantastic.
Nice.
Our technology always loves us during this segment.
Yeah, I know.
I got it. Here we go. We're good. All right. Started his career as a linebacker playing playing for Nevada. Drafted in the fifth round in 2012, played for the Jaguars, Broncos, and Raiders.
I almost said Tim Tebow, but that is not the right order.
He did not play linebacker.
He also did not play for the Raiders. So,
Super Bowl champion, by the way. Super Bowl 50. So with the Broncos.
Yeah, it's not Vaughn.
Yeah, because that would be Bills.
Vaughn would have played for the Bills.
What year was he drafted?
2012. And his last year playing in the NFL was 2019 with the Raiders.
This is going to make me so mad.
Yeah, I know.
Brandon Marshall.
Yep, that was a good one. That was a good one.
See, I always think of the other Brandon Marshall.
Yeah, same. The receiver, because that always used to confuse me when I was a kid.
Yeah. All right, we're going back to the hardwood with another Kentucky legend. Drafted by the Dallas Mavericks, then went to the Miami Heat, then to the Charlotte Hornets, and then, of course, the expansion happened, and they went to the New Orleans Hornets. Or the relocation, I should say. So technically the Pelicans.
Anthony Davis?
I never have any idea on these basketball. It's not AD because he started with the Pelicans, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not him.
Oh, you say he's currently with the Pelicans.
Well, he retired in 2005, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm definitely not going to get it then.
Retired in 05.
But you just saw him yesterday.
That's who I thought with Rajon Rondo was, and this is who I can't think of his name.
He's on the panel for, for NCAA. Oh, my goodness.
I don't know his name. I don't know why I can't think of his name.
He is one of the greatest Kentucky Wildcats of all time.
Oh, my goodness. Why am I drawing a blank on his name?
He's got like a nickname and everything. His nickname is like MASH, isn't it?
Yep. It's in his name, pal.
It's MASHworth? MASHful?
Nope. Jamal Mashburn.
Jamal Mashburn. Golly.
I think we got time for one more round. Let's hit it.
All right, cool.
Okay.
I'm sticking on the diamond. Texas Rangers, Detroit Tigers, Angels, Red Sox, Padres. Mm-hmm. And he began his career in 2006. Second baseman.
Still playing.
No, after his last year was with the Padres in 2019.
Mm. I was about to say Luis Arias, but it's not him.
No, he plays for the Giants now.
Yeah.
Not Chase Utley. You didn't say Phillies in any of those.
Nope.
Second baseman.
Did you say Yankees at one point?
I did not.
Oh, it's not my boy Headley.
Robinson Cano? No, he played for the Yankees. No.
Yeah, he's a Marlin too, and a Met.
Trying to think of some second baseman.
I don't know.
Alex Stein was shortstop. Go ahead.
Ian Kinsler.
Yeah, I would have never gotten that.
Yeah, deep pull there.
He was a pretty good fantasy baseball player, by the way, if you had him on your fantasy team back in the day. Oh, anyways, continue. Sorry.
I guess neither of us did.
I was waiting for you to go.
It's all good. Staying with the diamond here. Going to get the hump.
Love baseball today, don't you?
Yeah, dude, opening week coming up, man. Current player still. Drafted, but had his opening day start was with Arizona in 2008. Then after that, played for the Tigers, Nationals, Dodgers, Mets, Rangers, and currently with the Blue Jays. 8-time All-Star, 2-time World Series champion, 3-time Cy Young Award winner, 2-time MLB first team.
Is it Mad Max?
I was about to say Mad Max.
Indeed it is.
There we go.
I heard Blue Jays and pitcher, and that's the only reason I got that.
I love it.
All right, since you guys are just going to stick with baseball, I'm just going to stick with Kentucky legends today. Kentucky legend, drafted by the Charlotte Hornets, then traded to the Los Angeles Clippers, then to the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Can I get a year?
Repeat that again?
Drafted in 2018.
Okay, so kind of recent.
And was traded to Oklahoma City?
He was.
First team?
Drafted by the Charlotte Hornets.
It's not Shea, because Shea's always been with OKC, right? I think.
Nope.
No.
Is it Shea?
Maybe it is Shea. Maybe I'm an idiot.
It is Shea.
Oh, my gosh. I worked myself into a shoot.
It is Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. A lot of people don't know. He was drafted by the Hornets and then traded on draft night to the Los Angeles Clippers.
Could you imagine what the Hornets would look like with LaMelo Ball and Shea?
I mean, they'd be pretty. I mean, he was involved in that. The reason he was traded to Oklahoma City because he was involved with that Paul George trade that sent Paul George to the Clippers. And I think we know who won that trade now looking back on it. So it is, in fact, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Fun show today, gentlemen. Even more fun day of basketball ahead of us. Vanderbilt in action tonight as they take on Nebraska for a shot at the Sweet 16. Kentucky in action tomorrow against Iowa State, I believe at 2:45. And then Tennessee takes on Virginia. All for shots at the Sweet 16. But for Nick Frazier, for Christian Skelton, my name's Connor Newt saying so long. We'll see you next week. Preds hockey coming up here in about an hour. Max Serz will have pregame coverage for you starting at noon as the Predators take on the Vegas Golden Knights live from Bridgestone Arena. But that's it for us. Thanks for listening to the Weekend Huddle right here on 102.5 The Game.
See ya.